Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Governor Kathy Hochul unveiled her budget proposal for the next fiscal year this week. The $260 billion plan includes more investments in child care and education, as well as funding to ease the impact of federal budget cuts and tariffs. And as Samuel King with the New York Public News Network reports, the plan is boosted by more than $10 billion in unexpected revenue.
Governor Kathy Hochul says the state's strong revenues mean her budget can invest in new programs without raising taxes. Those revenues are coming from continued consumer spending and strong returns on Wall Street.
And that's why we're able to invest more without asking New Yorkers to pay more. So let me be clear about something else. This is not an austerity budget, but it is a disciplined one. And we're continuing to invest in core services that New Yorkers rely on while keeping the growth of state operating funds at a responsible level.
The budget includes her child care proposals and boosts in school aid, as well as major investments like $300 million for economic development and revitalization in Rochester. But that good news was counteracted by cuts in federal spending. Hochul is proposing the state spend about 11% more on Medicaid to make up the difference.
The federal government was a reliable partner, making sure the funds were there. In just 1 year, the Trump administration has shattered that trust, and we're bearing the brunt of it.
Fiscal watchdogs like Andrew Ryan with the Citizens Budget Commission say Hochul should have used the extra revenues to protect against a future downturn.
What we're seeing here could be characterized as a missed opportunity budget. With strong revenues and smart spending priorities, if we shift money from lower priority spending, we can stabilize the budget, be prepared for the feds, and support affordability programs.
Hochul's proposal is just the first step in the process. Now the Assembly and Senate will come up with their own budget plans. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie calls the governor's budget a, quote, good opening. And Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says her conference hasn't ruled out tax increases.
You know, as we go through the process, we always have progressive taxes on the table. We always have revenue possibilities on the table. So we'll have to see what happens.
Republicans like State Senator Stephen Chan of Brooklyn criticized the spending in Hochul's plan, saying the governor should have provided more relief to taxpayers and taken steps to rein in spending.
I'm sure that the proposed $260 billion, that's going to grow, in comparison to states like Texas and Florida, we're spending much more per capita.
The budget is due by April 1st. In recent years, that deadline has passed without a budget. Hochul indicated that this year may be no different. In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
In Governor Hochul's State of the State address last week, she committed an additional $250 million toward affordable housing development. Affordable housing is a huge issue across the North Country's tourism areas, where local workers have found it increasingly difficult to afford buying a home in recent years. Think nurses, teachers, social workers, and hospitality staff. This week, we meet one of those people. He found a permanent home in the heart of the Adirondack High Peaks at a small affordable housing project of just four homes in downtown Keene. The New York Public News Network's Amy Feiereisel reports.
Purchasing a home in the small community of Keene is like a dream come true for 30-year-old Dakota Inman. He grew up in Syracuse, but spent a lot of his childhood and early adulthood visiting this area.
When I was in college, it was pretty much in Keene, camping at Chapel Pond pretty much every weekend throughout my early 20s.
Inman went to school to be a teacher and specifically looked for open jobs in the Adirondacks. When he found one in the Aust-Sable Valley Central School District 6 years ago, he was thrilled. He's an 8th grade English teacher and wrestling coach there. But finding and keeping housing has been a real issue. He found his first apartment in Lake Placid through word of mouth.
Where I was there for a year, it turned into an Airbnb, got kicked out. I think that first move was very concerning. It was like, oh, that's what life's like in a mountain town.
The number of short-term rental properties listed on sites like Airbnb and Vrbo has increased dramatically in the Adirondacks over the last decade. And the average price of a home in Essex County rose by more than 50% between 2019 and 2022. Inman says he's watched a lot of his peers, people who had jobs and lives here and wanted to stay, end up leaving. That includes other teachers.
We're all in the same bubble, or it's like we, you know, you went to school, you got a master's, you work with kids, you're doing all these right things, but you can't actually afford to live in the community you're servicing in, which that's tough.
So when he heard about a small housing development in Keene targeted towards people like him, he pursued the opportunity. Inman moved into his first home in Both Meadow Trail, purchased for $160,000 in early December.
Being a new homeowner, a place that I've always wanted to live in, and, you know, knowing that I'm here and I'm going to be here, it's pretty awesome.
Inman is very much who Adirondack Roots, the housing nonprofit that developed the Both Meadow Trail project, envisioned living here. They wanted to create units for people who didn't qualify for low-income housing assistance or programs like SNAP and Medicaid, but who were still struggling to afford long-term housing in the area. To apply to buy one of these homes, for example, a single person had to make less than $64,000 a year. Caitlin Wargo is the interim executive director for Adirondack Roots.
There's a number of housing studies have shown we need thousands of units of housing that are attainable for the working people of the Adirondacks to be able to afford to live.
A 2023 study by the Lake Champlain Lake George Regional Planning Board found that 7,500 additional housing units are needed for the local workforce in Essex, Hamilton, Franklin, and Clinton counties. Both Meadow Trail is a drop in the bucket towards that goal. It's just four houses. And even those were a tall order, says Wargo, a two-decades-long journey. It started when former town supervisor Tom Both and his wife Alana sold a piece of land in downtown Keene to Adirondack Roots, then called the Housing Assistance Program of Essex County. Wargo called it a favorable price.
A tremendous discount because they wanted it to be used someday for workforce housing.
That was the easy part. Adirondack Roots had to buy more land for access, demolish a building with asbestos in it. And the price of building the homes was always going to cost more than what moderate income people could afford to pay.
The finances for affordable housing developments, they actually don't pencil out for developers. And that's one of the reasons why it takes so long, is you need to be able to access different sources of funding.
It was only through community donations and two state programs that Adirondack Roots was able to spend $400,000 per house, but sell them for $160,000. This was a new experience for Adirondack Roots, which largely deals with housing repair and mobile home replacement. Both Meadow Trail was their first new build in decades. But Wargo says the need for this housing is real. They had over 30 applications for the four homes.
Each one of those new residents, new homeowners, has a story of having to move out of their rental because it was being sold out from under them. The rent was going up so high. Even during the process of closing, one of the new owners had to move.
That's why the organization is looking to replicate the Both Meadow Trail model. They're in the pre-development stage in a few different communities. Back in Keene, Dakota Inman says it feels incredible to know he owns this home, can afford his mortgage, and most importantly, gets to stay in the Adirondacks.
The reality is if I couldn't find a place to live, I was probably going to have to leave at some point. And that 160 mark really allows me to live here, to teach here, and also kind of hold on to the reason why I'm here, which is to recreate.
By coincidence, most of Inman's new neighbors are also educators and feel they've finally landed in their long-term home. For the New York Public News Network, I'm Amy Feireisel.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With the 2026 session now underway, I sat down with Murad Awada, president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition, and we spoke about a major bill they hope to pass this legislative session.
We want to pass the New York for All Act, which would completely prohibit state resources being used to collude with immigration enforcement. And, you know, the governor wants to protect, you know, sensitive locations and restrict a certain amount of money going to law enforcement agencies. that would prohibit the agency from being able to work with immigration enforcement. And what we're seeing across the state is local police departments are, you know, and local counties are signing on to become 287G partners, which is pretty much deputizing local officials and, you know, becoming federal immigration enforcement agents, which is not their job. If you are, a police officer in Nassau County, your job is not to be, an ICE officer and just be expected to uphold what is your job, the first job, which is public safety, and on at the same time undermine that job by telling the very same people who you have been convincing it is safe to go to the police with any issues that they're going to get tricked and trapped in their county or their city. So that's sort of where we are at right now. We want to make sure that no resources go to support no state resources go to support immigration enforcement, because again, that's not what our tax dollars should do. They should be bettering our state, not harming our communities.
He is Murad Awada, president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition, on this week's Capital Connection. Murad, you mentioned sensitive locations. Explain that to our listeners. I would assume one of them is courthouses.
Yeah, courthouses are sensitive locations, as well as schools and hospitals. You also have places of faith. So those would all be considered, you know, sensitive locations. And, you know, that is also important. But I think the most important thing that we can do in this moment is not just protect our sensitive locations, but also protect our communities and our state resources by passing the New York for All Act.
How does that impact the issue of the sort of federal immunity that goes along with ICE? I mean, you know, you want to protect sensitive locations, but they're still going into courthouses. They're still trying to get into schools. I see a story today about a 5-year-old boy who was, quote, used as bait when they picked him up at the school to draw the parents out of the home. So when a federal agency acts with impunity, with no restrictions, how can the state stop that?
That's a great question. The first way the state can stop that is by making sure our state tax dollars and our resources are not going to support what they're doing. So that's why we have to pass the New York for All Act. Secondly, Senator Myrie has introduced the New York State Civil Rights Act, which would give people, New Yorkers, the right to sue ICE agents if they violate their civil rights.
That's Murad Awada, president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Protect the Adirondacks has been calling for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to conduct a so-called carry capacity study. The group says the state agency has failed to comply with management plan's requirements, and it has sued to require compliance. Protect the Adirondacks Conservation Director and Counsel Christopher Amato tells the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley what a carrying capacity study is and why one is needed for the Saranac Lakes complex.
It's meant to assess the ability of a particular ecosystem that could be either lands or bodies of water to sustain different types of uses. So for something like a water body in the Adirondacks, what you would be looking at is what is the level of use, what types of uses are going on, what are the impacts of those uses, And finally, how are those impacts affecting the ecological health of this particular water body?
Protect the Adirondacks filed a lawsuit because the DEC apparently didn't comply with what you say is a mandated study, and you're now appealing a decision by the state Supreme Court to dismiss it based on the statute of limitations. What's your arguments there?
First of all, the management of all of the state's forest preserve lands in the Adirondack Park is governed by something called the Adirondack Park State Land Master Plan. And the master plan specifically directs that DEC shall conduct carrying capacity studies as part of its management of forest preserve lands and waters. In addition to that, every unit of forest preserve has what's called a unit management plan. The unit management plan for the Saranac Lakes Wild Forest, which the Saranac Lakes complex is part of that unit, specifically committed the DEC to conduct the carrying capacity of those lakes. Both the master plan and the unit management plan are a mandatory commitment by the DEC to do the study. And they have not been willing to do it, even though the last budget that was passed by the state legislature and approved by the governor included an appropriation of $1 million specifically for DEC to do this study. And we have had multiple conversations with DEC saying, you have all this money, why aren't you doing this study? For reasons that still remain unclear to us, DEC has not taken that action.
Christopher, the clause that you cited in the master plan, if I read it right, does not mandate when or how often a carrying capacity should be completed. So why are you pressing for it now?
Generally, the way that these plans are set up, there's a period of 5 years during which the actions that are set forth in the unit management plan are to be at least begun, if not completed. And those 5 years had elapsed. DEC had done nothing to undertake the carrying capacity study. And that's why, first, we sent a letter to DEC laying out our arguments and saying, listen, you know, we think you have a non-discretionary duty to undertake this study. You know, please let us know what your plans are. You know, do you have a schedule? Are you planning on doing it? And the response we got back was basically, we're not interested in this.
What about other lake and river systems in the Adirondacks? Because this right now is focused on the Saranac Lakes complex.
Well, to the extent that other lakes and ponds in the Adirondacks are part of the forest preserve, they're subject to the same requirement in the master plan that a carrying capacity study be done. You know, we have focused on the Saranac Lakes complex because I think there's a widespread recognition, even on the part of DEC and APA, that this is a complex of interconnected water bodies that receives a very heavy level of recreational use. And, you know, that is something that can, for obvious reasons, lead to a number of different impacts, disturbance of wildlife, noise impacts, water pollution from outboard motors. You know, there's a range of impacts that can occur when water bodies are being heavily used to the point where the water body is no longer able to sustain that use without suffering some sort of adverse impact.
How do you gauge overuse? I mean, how much use is going on in this area, and why do you consider it to be overused?
There was concern about overuse just based on, you know, DEC's observations of what was going on in terms of how many people were out there, how many boats, what kind of impact that was having on, people's experience of the Saranac Lakes. But the purpose of the carrying capacity study is to actually reduce it to some quantifiable things, like measure the water quality, find out what the level of pollutants are in these lakes. Where is, you know, if there is pollution, where is it coming from? Is there something that can be done to reduce the inflow of pollution? Where is, you know, what's the source of it? And, you know, there's a number of things that can be done to actually quantify the adverse impacts.
Chris, the Protect the Adirondacks group is currently awaiting a court date for oral argument in 2026, according to the press release. What's happening there? Can you give us an update on what's next?
Yes. So we filed our appeal, and the state is now in the process of preparing their response to our appeal papers, our appellate brief. We will have an opportunity after that to file what's called a reply to the state. And once that happens, then the court will advise us of a date for oral argument, which most likely will be probably in the fall. You know, our preference is always to work cooperatively with the state agencies. You know, litigation is always absolutely our last resort. And we have reached out multiple times to the DEC about this. Even if they were to tell us, hey, yeah, we will do this study and, you know, we'll start it by such and such a date. You know, here's our plan for going forward. That would solve everything. We'd be happy with that. But so far, they just continue to be unwilling to commit to doing this study that they promised to do.
In response to an inquiry regarding Protect the Adirondacks litigation, the New York State DEC said it, quote, does not comment on pending litigation, unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Every winter, more than 150 bald eagles migrate from the frigid temperatures of Canada and upstate New York to the upper Delaware River. The 73-mile stretch of the river winds through Delaware and Sullivan counties in New York into Wayne and Pike counties in Pennsylvania. The New York Public News Network's Kimberly Izar has more on this special time of year.
Tracy Venny peers through her spotting scope towards the icy upper Delaware River. She and fellow bird watchers are searching for bald eagles.
I just find them so majestic, and they're just so, I don't know. To watch them glide, seems like nothing can stop them, so they're powerful.
Venny's one of the Delaware Highlands Conservancy volunteers, helping bird watchers outside the Zane Grey Museum in Lackawaxen, Pennsylvania. Bald eagles are known for their striking white heads and dark brown bodies. She says spotting them has a lot to do with getting the timing right.
I feel like coming early and coming late are the best times. I feel like early in the morning when it's really cold, I feel like they come out to fish early. And then I feel like they come out late. So at this time of year, I'll say 4-5 o'clock. But early and late, those are my tips.
Every year, about 150 to 200 bald eagles migrate down from the frigid temperatures of Canada and New York to the upper Delaware River. They're looking for food and habitat, says National Park Service Ranger Susie Casper.
They definitely need some open water if they're going to hunt. So they'll dive down pretty quickly when they catch a fish. So they need to have, there's no specifications necessarily, but they need to have definitely an open pool of water for them to be able to catch a fish.
Bald eagles were designated as endangered in the 1960s, reaching an all-time low of 417 known nesting pairs in 1963.
In this area, there weren't very many bald eagles left because of DDT, bad pesticide that we were using in our country for a long time. And it didn't only just affect bald eagles, but it also affected any kind of bird and animals, and it was getting into our waterways through a series of bioaccumulation. So what happened, the long or the short is it made the eagles' eggshells very thin. So then when they went to go lay their eggs during the incubation process, the mortality rate was pretty high. So not many bald eagles were being born. So over a long period of time, the population really just kind of crashed. And so that's when conservation efforts really began to bring, and of course, you know, through the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, all those things really helped bring back the American bald eagle. And of course, a lot of local players.
Today, it's estimated that the bald eagle population has climbed to more than 316,000 individual bald eagles. That includes more than 71,000 nests, according to the American Eagle Foundation. Outside the Zane Grey Museum, Delaware Highlands Conservancy volunteer Jack Barnett peers out across the river. He says he sees what looks to be a juvenile bald eagle.
Well, what we're seeing is eagle doing what it does, eating its scavenged food, probably a dead carcass. It's enjoying its, or defending its find from the other animals in the area.
Barnett says patience is key for any bird watcher.
Take your time, be quiet. Although the resident eagles here are kind of immune to people, a lot of them eagles that are visiting from other places north of us are not familiar with people, and they do get scared and don't approach.
For now, he'll be keeping an eye on the tall pine trees, where Barnett says bald eagles like to nest. In Lackawaxen, I'm Kimberly Izar for the New York Public News Network.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2604. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.